So you were in a flying squad on August 1st. What was that like?
Yeah. Crazy. First of all, I was too old to be in a frigging flying squad. I was too old to do tactics, even crazier, for a flying squad.
How old were you at that time?
Like 40. Mm-hmm. I'm really way too old to be doing this shit. I remember running from a horse. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm 40 years old and I'm running from a horse.
Oh,
crazy. I'm retiring. This is nuts. As soon as I get away from this horse, that's it. You know, I would stop and be like, yeah, I'm a smoker. Like, I gotta run from a horse to catch up with 20-year-olds who are like doing their thing, you know? It was great. It was great. Because, you know, I don't know if you remember, but SLAM has been doing a lot of, my work with SLAM, we did several civil disobediences, organized civil disobediences around Mumia's case, right? And so we made these decisions that we were going to risk arrest, and then we were going to go inside. And once inside, you know, that and that there was a purpose behind that, you know, particularly as predominantly people of color, women of color, young people of color going inside with a political agenda was pretty cool. And I thought, you know, important in terms of making those kind of decisions at the time, particularly given that, you know, at the time when we, along with others, I'm not just saying with just SLAM, but we, along with other, you know, the more radical ilk, were being really critical of how protest was happening in New York, right? Because at the time, like, what was it, Abner Louima and different high-profile cases, the protests became pretty much, you know, they were spectacle, right? And so, you know, you can count on Sharpton to come out and do his Sharpton thing, and you can count on, you know, Channel 1 News and CBS or NBC affiliates coming out. I remember, like, before the Abner Louima case, the pigs were just on, like, some crazy pig shit, you know? Like, they were just wild, and not that that's, you know, totally surprising, but, you know, sometimes there's a little bit more restraint with their shit, and they were just fuck wild. And with Abner Louima, like with Baez, Abner Louima, and many other folks who were killed or maimed by the police in New York, you know, the people would get upset, and the people would stage these marches, you know. And like with the Louima march, he was the one who was a Haitian dude who was tortured by, I forget, maybe it was 70. Anyway, it was, he was raped with a toilet plunger, and, you know, people were outraged, right? Haitian community really outraged. Night before this huge protest, you know, the newscast was hanging out in front of one of the kind of, workspaces where people were meeting about the protest, you know how we do, and making signs and that kind of shit. And they were like, oh, we're standing outside in front of the meeting where tomorrow there will be a huge protest. I was like, this is madness, you know, like, what happened to protest? You know, now it has become spectacle. And I really didn't see myself and others, really didn't see a distinction between that and, like, St. Patrick's Day parades or whatever. You know, it became like an event. And so many of us really kind of critiquing how protest was being framed decided to start doing direct actions and civil disobediences to shift that, you know, just to shift that paradigm. And so we, SLAM have been involved in some of these organized protests. And we had taken quite a few arrests, right, in Philly, around Mumia, like one or two, in D.C., in New York. Like, so we were all over the place getting arrested. And so at this time, we decided, a lot of us made the decision that we didn't want to get arrested, that we wanted to do more disruption than go in with an organized arrest, in this case, you know. And, you know, I had also been part of this other network, an affinity group of folks who were going around doing direct actions, mostly like billboard, you know, redecorations and banner dropping and shit like that. And so, you know, I was making like some pretty distinct and pretty clear distinctions between civil disobedience and direct action, right? And so being part of the Flying Squad was cool because it was an opportunity to disrupt business as usual, you know, and at the same time not actually intentionally put ourselves in the hands of the state.
Right, I remember that. I feel like that's always inspired me so much, and it feels somehow like more sincere in a way, but it's not, but all of our actions are kind of, you know, symbolic, but in a way it just felt like at least we weren't just trying to be symbolic, we were trying to really go for something more direct, yeah, I was always inspired by that.
Yeah, and I think that there's, you know, there's a question. It's tactical. It's not a strategy. It's like, okay, what tactic works best for this situation, you know? And then, like, that's not to say that folks who made the, I'm glad there were people who made the intentional decision to get arrested, you know? But I think there was also a need for folks to make an intentional decision to not get arrested, and to continue to form some, you know, because even getting arrested, whether getting arrested intentionally or disrupting, you know, in business as usual intentionally, it's all about, like, it's all about making a statement, and it's all about, again, you know, making some intentional decisions around disrupting business as usual. And I think, you know, tactics being what they were, that August 1st day of action, we made a decision that we wanted to stay out if at all possible and to be on the street more present than, you know, behind bars. So.
And you didn't get arrested, right?
Nope. Imagine that.